Hey everybody, this is Quick Hit. We are looking at all three nights of Charleston, and we are with Jed, who is a listener and a Twitter follower, and maybe one of the furthest traveled to get to the Charleston shows. How you doing, Jed?
I'm doing great, RJ. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us where are you from, how did you get there, and how you ended up in Charleston for the weekend?
Yeah, I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and every time they release tour dates, I just throw in for a couple of tickets by mail, lottery orders, and I happen to hit on Charleston. And there's really kind of no better time of year to be escaping from the cold, dark winters in Alaska than now. And coming down to Charleston seemed like a pretty good prospect. So I hit on the three tickets and pretty psyched here, and just really grateful for the opportunity.
That's really cool. And you come down by yourself, or do you get a crew together from Alaska?
I came down by myself. I couldn't talk my wife into coming down for three nights, but she was gracious enough to let me come.
Cool.
Yeah, she's good like that.
Awesome. Did you get? I saw a lot of people posting just about the food and the kind of scene in Charleston. Did you get to do some exploring, kind of see what the city had to offer?
Oh yeah, yeah. Had a couple of great experiences. I ate some brisket at Lewis Barbecue, which was amazing. On Saturday, I went to a bar called Prohibition for brunch, and got to check out a mandolin player there. A guy by the name of Daniel Patrick. He has a podcast called Mandolins and Beer. If there's any mandolin nerds out there,
cool.
Check that out. So,
that's
awesome. And I'm going to try to hit up Leon's Fried Chicken before I leave. My flight's at 5. So
okay, well,
try to
you don't have
my faith.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't have much time, so let's get into some of the shows here. So Friday night, you go in, and I assume that at least what I saw, the venue was crowded and people were psyched to be there. Seems like it was probably a pretty good scene to walk into.
Yeah, it was. I walked around a little bit. A lot of people looking for tickets. I met up with a friend of mine who lives in New Mexico. He came out to the shows. He came out to Charleston to see family, but he didn't have any tickets. And someone miracled him a ticket right before the show. So he got to get in, which was a pretty wonderful feeling.
Amazing.
But yeah, it was a good scene out front, and we were just psyched to be inside.
Cool. So the first set, both sets, I think the first night had a ton of songs, but I thought some good moments in there. What were some of your takeaways from night one?
Definitely in set one, the Divided Sky, Sloth, and Bowie, three songs with a lot of changes. Strawberry Letter 22 as well is like, a lot of changes, a lot of words in those songs. And they ripped. That Divided Sky really from set one was amazing. Set two, obviously, probably don't need to tell anyone this, but that Sense and Subtle Sounds into No Quarter was a pretty sweet
really
highlight. Sure.
Really great jam. The in set one, there was we sort of, like you said, those highlights for you, and there were probably maybe 16 songs in the first set if you count Horse and Silence separately and all that. There's a pretty well jammed out Destiny Unbound there, which is cool, but I just wanted to throw that out there. But the Sense into No Quarter seems like that was sort of the highlight of the show. Is that what people were talking about afterwards as well?
Yeah, it seemed like it. Just kind of overhearing people on the way back to the car after the show. I haven't been reading a ton of reviews yet, and I haven't gone back to listen to any of it yet. But it seemed like the Sentence and Subtle Sounds was the highlight. Destiny Unbound, always a welcome kind of rarity. I was fortunate enough to catch that show at Fenway back in 2009.
Oh, yeah.
When it was really
cool.
Still pretty rare. But I'm all about these days kind of catching songs I've never seen before. And, I was chasing that 300 song, unique songs, stat going into this run, and, managed to blow that out of the water. I came in with 289 and I ended the run with, 311.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. So you were, and I think that Fish was on their way to some sort of record, or at least the top couple, bands for playing the most original songs. On Saturday night, I was talking to Amar, and who does the Anatomy of a Jam series, and he said that Umphrey's had the single year record for the most original songs, but The Fish was second, and I'm not sure if Saturday or Sunday surpassed that. But I'm glad you got your record there.
Yeah, it makes it seem kind of arbitrary after the fact, but I'm gonna keep going.
Were you surprised at all by that, like that Limb by Limb that sort of went type two and kind of unfinished there toward the end of the second set? Because I feel like if they start playing Limb by Limb in the second set, you maybe think that's like sort of the beginning of the end of the show. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, there were definitely moments all over the weekend where you're like, oh, okay, maybe they'll close it out with this one. I did have in my notes that they had a nice Limb by Limb jam in that second set. Always a welcome tune. I'm the kind of guy that's like, I'm not going to ever complain about what they play. I don't care. I mean, there were people leaving for the bathroom or leaving to get beers in the middle of the set. I didn't miss a note.
That's awesome. Well, what about night two? Because I will say we have to acknowledge that there are always going to be people on the internet who didn't have as good of a time as, or they didn't think the band played as well, or they didn't get the songs they want, or all sorts of things. But there are a lot of people like you, I think, who are like, you just go and you feel grateful to be able to go, and you have fun when you're there. So let's talk about night two, because that was maybe the strongest of the three from a lot of perspectives. But what do you think, in starting with that Fluffhead opener?
Yeah, I mean, look, insane that they played in set one Fluffhead, Reba, and Gaiuti. I mean,
yeah.
it's like, those are like three impossible songs. How many different parts to each of those songs are there? It's crazy. The Gaiuti, you know, like that's a really hard song, and they haven't nailed that in a long time, but this was, you know, almost as close to as good as it'll get. And it was a great jam, you know, when that thing finally busts open at the end, it's the energy in that arena was just palpable, you know, it was just off the hook. So yeah, a short jam in Reba, but you know, it's first set, what do you expect? And the composed sections were pretty good. Like I said, I haven't gone back and listened yet, but, I didn't catch a ton of flubs in that. I'm sure there might have been a few. I'll move on to set two.
Yeah, I will say, I just want to say, Jed, I was watching the stream, and I thought that Fluffhead, Reba, and Gaiuti were all really well practiced. Like, I didn't hear a lot of flubs either. I don't really listen for flubs, but, you know, the egregious ones jump out at you. But I thought that all three of those composed parts were, like, really well practiced and well performed. So I agree with you.
And I would almost rather go to a show where the composed and practice sections are better and there's less jamming, to be honest. But, to each their own.
Yeah. And so set two here, this is a real monster. A lot going on there. What were your kind of takeaways?
There was a ton going on. You know, all the crazy little drummer boy stuff that they were trying to throw in there. The thing that really hooked me on set two was the jam out of Split Open and Melt. Really just seemed to kind of, you know, it didn't take them very long to just kind of go somewhere else. And it's like my impression, I was kind of watching from behind the stage that night, and at one point I was like, man, did they get lost on this jam? Are they going to be able to find their way back into close this up?
It's always a good sign.
Yeah. And like, sure enough, they went back into Cross-Eyed and Painless. And I was just sort of like in my own head thinking, oh man, I wonder if they did that because they couldn't figure out how to get back into the Split Open and Melt jam. But, you know, those guys know what they're doing.
That's funny though.
And sometimes like a fun way to meander through that set, for sure.
I'm sure that plenty of people in the crowd were also lost as to what jam it was. That's how you know it's a good show, you know, where you're like, wait, what song is this again?
Weren't they playing something else?
But it is cool. They went into the Cross-Eyed, and the Cross-Eyed was, you know, had a good segment, and then back into Split Open and Melt, which they've been doing that a lot recently in terms of finishing songs or finishing, you know, songs after jams. But that Cross-Eyed was, I think, like 12 or so minutes, you know? And then, but that was, I guess that was the first one, right? Because then they went back into it After Split It, yeah, in Split Open ML. So that was the second time they played Crosshead.
Yeah, which is just kind of like the theme for this tour, it seemed like, with the kind of plasma bands and was that in Providence? And just fun band, you know. It's like they always keep you on your toes. And
what do you think about
something crazy?
What do you think about those last three songs? Like, I know that, you know, some people look at these, you know, the last few songs as like Life Beyond the Dream, Wilson, Squirming Coil. When I was watching, I thought it seemed fine, but did it take any of the energy out of the room, or were people still engaged throughout the end?
You know, I can't speak for anyone else, but I was hanging on every note. And, you know, one of my favorite parts of any Fish show, the outro to Squirming Coil. I just think that that's such a poignant way how they all kind of leave the stage each individually and leave him to kind of, you know, have his moment out there. I think that's always pretty special and doesn't seem to take the energy away from me. I loved it. And the Life Beyond the Dream was a new song for me. I hadn't caught any of the Ghosts of the Forest in any shows before, so always happy to see a new song. And then so that was a great way to end it. And then just a cool encore. I mean, I've seen Grind before and Frankenstein with Page on the keytar. I think I've seen him play it, but not him on the keytar. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And that was a good way to end it. And then going into the Sunday show, never miss a Sunday show, as they say. And you got to see all three, which is really cool. Did it seem more energetic last night than the previous couple nights?
Yeah, I mean, the arena definitely, each night, the arena seemed to fill up a lot faster. I always get in somewhat early. I don't go in right at doors, but I went in somewhat early, and it seemed like every night, I mean, and by Sunday night, I think at 7 o'clock, it was, like, already pretty packed in there. I mean, I think the energy was still pretty high. I felt like on Friday, the crowd was kind of roaring for them to come out. And on Saturday or Sunday, it was slightly muted, but I think the energy was still, you know, pretty top notch. I think expectations were high for sure.
And they opened with a song, Sigma Oasis, which hasn't been played by Fish. I think Trey had played it in a solo show, but I know it's a song that Tom was really excited about. And how was that received in the room?
I dug it. I was, you know, as soon as they started playing it, I was like, oh, they've never played this before. I didn't realize that it was had been played on Trey acoustic tour. Looking forward to kind of hearing that song again and kind of listening to the lyrics. You know, a lot of these songs are got some really interesting lyrics to them now. I think that's a result of just kind of the band maturing, Tom maturing, and Trey maturing, all of them. Just kind of living a life, and so look forward to unpacking some of those lyrics.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that one. And what were some of the other highlights you had from the first set of last night?
Oh man, there were a lot again because it was a pretty like heavy, you know, songsy first set. That's for sure.
Yeah, ton.
Going back and looking at it now, certainly the curtain. Everyone wonders as soon as they start playing it, are they gonna end it with the width part? But they went it seemed to me like they went so smoothly into Mound, which is such a crazy, weird tempo to start.
Yeah,
you know, that song is just like your mind has got to, you got to be using like both sides of your brain to kind of keep track of the timing on that song. And so it was a smooth transition into Mound. Love Brian and Robert. It's just such a good cool down song. I feel like there were some people kind of muttering about Crazy sometimes, but I, you know, was watching Mike and watching Fish really kind of get into the groove. And, you know, again, sometimes we project our own sort of thoughts on the band. And my impression at that time was like, oh, Mike and Fish don't want to stop jamming on this song. And they just had a really cool groove going during Crazy sometimes. So, but it seemed like Trey had kind of had enough and then, went right into Frost, which is just such a beautiful, beautiful song. Probably one of my favorite ballads of his of recent years for sure.
Yeah. It's a really good one. I really like that. I really like that song too. And that one of the kind of ballads that along with I guess there's a couple that have been written in the past few years, but I feel like this and Shade are like two of the representatives of the new ballads, you know?
Yeah.
And then you'd seen Alumni Blues Letter to Jimmy Page before?
Had never seen Alumni Blues Jimmy Page, so that was
awesome.
That was awesome, you know. Maybe missed a note or two during Jimmy Page, but you know, it's a 5-minute song. Who cares? It's a great funky weird, almost like interlude. And then, you know, to go after Alumni, you're like, okay, maybe they'll play one more song, and they go into It's Ice, which just has, you know, that song more often than not just has some kind of a dark, weird, funky, spacey jam in it. And you're like, well, I don't know. Are they going to end it with that? And of course, Walls of the Cave, which is just a barn burner every time. I feel like
it really is.
Just really killed it. Really killed
great,
it.
Great placement as a set closer. I feel like that's where it lives, and that's a good place to be.
Yeah, and man, Perota was just like on his A game all weekend for sure. I had some great views of the lights, particularly the views behind the stage were just incredible. You know, lighting up all the people, their faces, just really add such a cool backdrop. He really is fifth member of that band for sure.
Yeah. And he had some time to kind of work it out over the course of the tour. So you got to see right at the end when it was probably at its peak.
Yeah. Yeah.
So set two, last set of the weekend, what'd you think?
Yeah. You know, set two, I mean, typically I've done a couple of 3-night runs in my day, and you know, by night three and set two, you're just kind of like, oh man, am I gonna make it?
Yeah.
You know, it was after midnight. You know, didn't expect that. Don't know who did. It's interesting stat of mine is I've caught over half the after midnights.
Oh wow,
kind of a funny thing.
Yeah, last played Dix 2015, and only. I guess that was the eighth time total. So you're in good company.
Yeah. Saw it at Dix. Saw it at the Gorge, I think, in 2013 when JJ Kale passed away, and of course saw it at Big Cypress. So
awesome.
Some pretty like epic moments for them to play that song. Stealing Time was great. Energy, you know, when they busted into Energy, I see a lot of talk on Fishnet about how everyone wants them to play Energy, and so as soon as they started playing it, it seemed like the crowd response was again kind of muted, and it's like, you people want Energy and you're there playing it, why aren't you cheering? It's not my favorite song and it's not my favorite cover song, that's for sure, but it had a really great jam coming out of it, and I think just it was a great kind of jumping off point. So I've softened to that song for sure. Right before the second set started, my neighbor in my section turned to me and he's like, yeah, they're going to play Soul Planet, which isn't my favorite song, but I know that they're going to have a really awesome jam. And, as soon as they started playing it, I look over to him and he just kind of gives me the nod. And, it's just fun when you can connect with people over that and, you know, just make these like wild predictions and stuff. It's just something that really kind of binds our community together.
Yeah, totally. So. That's awesome. And it was a pretty good version. It was like 12 minutes of a good jam. I mean, that song has like a good track record, you know, it'll get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't understand people complaining about Soul Planet. It's a great song.
And Into Wingsuit, which to me is like a beautiful song. I would never be sad to hear that song.
Yeah, the way that thing builds is just so powerful. I think there were a couple of missed notes leading into it, but you know, once they got going with that thing, the way that thing builds and just the explosive energy that they can release into that room was just, oh man, it just kind of, you know, blows you away. It was a great song. I love Wayne Suit. Always wanted it this way, you know, kind of a page electronic dance tune.
Did that get people kind of back up after Wingsuit? Because it is a pretty high energy song.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to going back and blasting that one. Seems like they had some some good groups. I don't know if it quite peaked out the way Wingsuit did or the way some of their other, you know, kind of micro jams do. But again, I'll have to go back and check that out. Always love Petrichor. Always love Petrichor. Such a beautiful song.
I love it too. It's based on my reading through Twitter. It definitely is got the least or the most amount of, you know, polarizing comments on both sides. But to me, like, I think it's a great song. I think they can play it any show I'm at. It's fine. And I think it's a beautiful, like, I don't view it as a long, like, boring song. I think there's so many different segments. They're clearly into it. And I mean, I just think it's a really well put together song, but you know, there are people who do not like that, but you and I are on the same page there.
Right on, man.
Did you see people reacting that way in the crowd, or were people there pretty into it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the folks, maybe similar to me, were just tired at the end of a 3-night run, and there were a lot of people around me kind of sitting down. They were sitting down for some of the other slow tunes as well. But you know, hey, everyone enjoys their shows, or everyone does their shows the way they're going to do it. I was on my feet for, like I said, for every note. And I really appreciate that song a lot. I didn't give too many thoughts to the other people around me and whether or not they were into it or not. But by the time they busted into the opening notes of Boogie on Reggae Woven, everyone was like back on their feet and just like bouncing around again. And I think kind of probably like, oh, okay, they're going to close the set with this, you know, just like really kind of blast it. And, you know, had a nice little dance party. And then, wow, they went into Rise and Come Together, which is just a cool, just a really sort of emotionally good, feel good song. I think it's similar to More, you know, with just really sort of poignant lyrics that speak to a kind of a fraught time that we're living in. And I don't know, those lyrics really just sort of speak to me, and it's happy to see them close out the set with an uplifting song like that.
Wow, that's cool. And the, what, 5-song encore there? No, 4, I guess. Pebbles and Marbles, Sea of Stars, 4, Isabella,
yeah,
and then
like
the Chuck Dust Reprise.
Third set.
Yeah. And was that, how did that land with you, that whole encore?
Oh, well, you know, 3 songs I'd never heard before or seen before. Pebbles and Marbles, Beneath the Sea of Stars, and the Chalk Dust Reprise. Like, you know, I think everyone just kind of, you know, were blown away by that Chalk Dust, which is, you know, again, one of those sort of nods that the band gives us, you know, kind of like we're in on the joke. You know, they'll bust out something that no one would ever expect. I love Pebbles and Marbles. I think that's such a cool song. Round Room is my favorite studio album, so I was psyched to hear that. And then
cool.
Beneath the Sea of Stars is, again, that goes to the Forest album. Has a special place in my heart. It kind of hit me at a time when I needed to hear it. And so all those songs are, you know, just wonderful to hear. Isabella's a rager. Last time I had seen that was at one of the Baker's Dozen shows, so that was psyched. But yeah, I mean, I think that overall this run had, for me, everything I could have hoped for. Definitely did not disappoint. I'm going back home. I'm going back to work completely exhausted. My cup is empty, but my heart is full.
I could not have said it better myself. So thank you for taking the time to walk us through this. And also, we need to let you go so you can go eat one more amazing Charleston meal before you get on your flight.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate you giving me a call, and it's great to share my experience with you. And I'm really a big fan of your show.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us. Have a safe trip back to Alaska.
Cool. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you.